T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
I'm very curious to know, Sheldon, you were a Jeopardy contestant. First of all, tell us about your time being on Jeopardy. I know that's a very loaded question, but what do you remember of it, you know, all this time later? What do you remember about your time being on Jeopardy?
The first thing I remember is walking on the set and going, this is way smaller than I imagined it. It's kind of fantastic to finally see these things that you've dreamed about your entire life. I'm a huge game show fan, loved them since I was 4 or so, and I was kind of prodigal when it came to those things. I expected at some point in time to try and get on game shows. And so going there, it felt like a dream. Like everything was so kind of, I was kind of starry-eyed walking into the set. I remember meeting all of my competitors in the hotel lobby that they bus us from. And I was kind of, I was a little intimidated. We all weren't really talking to each other. Well, everybody was kind of talking around. I was kind of sitting in a corner because I wasn't sure how to approach. And then we got on the bus and we all started talking with each other and it became very interesting very quick. And then I remember actually stepping on the set and being blown away. They pulled us away for interviews, had to sit in the back room, the green room, and talk with each other, sign forms, get to know each other better. And then I remember starting the game. I think I blanked out on the publicity stuff. I started the game and getting in front of that board, seeing Alex Trebek, like, as they called us out, that was the first game that they aired. Having him poke behind the stage, he actually poked out a little bit, and we all kind of looked at him like, what are you doing out here? as he actually walked out, my mind just kind of snapped into game mode, but I was still a little bit nervous. it was weird being so in tune and yet so not in tune. I remember after my game watching it and dealing with people online as they were criticizing how the game went, that a big criticism was that we missed a lot of clues, and we were all thinking that during the game. We were very nervous, and we were the first game. So we were like, this is – like, you know how when you're at home and you're answering questions and you're just willing to throw a shot because, you know, you're answering questions at home. It's fun. And there's nothing on the line. Well, being on the show, there's everything on the line, and we were entirely nervous. I'm sorry, that was a lot.
No, but yeah, that's okay. So, you know, if I could follow up on that last point that you were talking about, you know, I'm somebody, me personally, you know, I watch Jeopardy, you know, most nights of the week, not every, but most nights, and I can't think of a single time that I've actually been, you know, standing, paying attention and watching the game. I'm usually just, you know, laying on my couch, just saying, you know, whatever, yelling out whatever the answer is to the TV, just like most people. But, you know, I imagine that things are just totally different the moment that you actually get on the stage. Because like you said, you know, you're actually losing stuff whenever you get a question wrong. Was there any way for you to ever prepare for that?
I think it's just watching a lot of the show and kind of, like, I would watch it in a lounge on our school, and people would gather around me and kind of be watching what my process was. And what I found hilarious about it is that I had instituted a set of rules. As somebody who's going to be on the show, they give you at the auditions, the in-person auditions, a little pen, a Jeopardy pen. And it is a very, the writing quality of it isn't the best, but the clicker is fantastic. And so we would use this. It's got a little red end, and it's supposed to represent the buzzer. And so I would have that buzzer if I was going to ring in. and I would also force everybody to not say anything until after Alex ended so that I could practice buzzer timing. It was, and I instituted these rules strictly. And so that's one of the biggest practices, honestly. I don't think you can practice for the knowledge. I think you can only buff what you know and kind of pick up what you don't. So geography is not a big skill of mine, but pop culture is a huge skill of mine. So I could only kind of pay attention to my pop culture and make sure I had that down. And then in geography, I wrote flashcard on flashcard for the 50 states, what the most populous cities were and what their capitals were. The capitals weren't the hard part. The populous cities, those were difficult. And then countries, trying to learn their capitals, which I did not have fun with at all. And then I did a lot of practice on baseball, but there was a baseball category in my game, and it just left my head almost as quickly as I had practiced it. So even if you practice, sometimes the nerves of getting up on that stage, all of your knowledge just wipes away and you have nothing left.
So what was the clicker like, being able to use that buzzer? I mean, did you have to actually wait for Alex to finish the question? And really, you know, I know it's easier said, just, you know, click faster than the guy or girl next to you. But, you know, there's a lot more than just that, right?
There is. So it's not just when Alex finishes, because that would be a little bit cruel. It would be like, oh, somehow a computer is guessing when Alex. No, there's actually people in the studio that enable the buzzers. And when they do so, there are lights on the side of the board that you can't see. And so those lights come on, and you kind of have to guess when those lights come on, because if you press right after those lights come on, you'll be fast, but you won't be nearly as fast as you need to be. So what you have to do is you have to kind of be ready to click as soon as Alex finishes, but before those lights come on. So it's most every Jeopardy contestant is a speed reader. We read through the clue, and then we let Alex finish it, and we're hearing that. As we're hearing him say the last words, we're getting ready to hit that button. And that's kind of the strategy that people go for.
Have you been watching this Jeopardy James guy who's been on episode tear?
James Holzhauer has been incredibly impressive, because he's been using the strategy that we're all afraid to use, but we would love to use. Like, we sit at home and we're like, oh, you know, if I got on the show, I would bet everything. But he's actually going out there and doing that. And it is increasingly impressive.
Well, what was your strategy then during the show?
I actually was thinking about following a strategy similar to him. I just didn't have the buzzer strike. He uses a controversial strategy known as the forest bounce. It's something where you jump around the board and try to not only find daily doubles, but confuse your opponents. Now, it's controversial because, for one, Alex actually hates it. He really does. If you ask people about that, Alex is not a fan of when people just don't go down the category, so he knows where you're going and can cross them off in order. And it's much more likely that if you do that strategy, he'll miss something and will have to retape or fill in a clue, which he's not a fan of. But secondly, he is building up a cache first. So he's hitting the bottom clues and hoping a daily double isn't down there. And if he hits the bottom clues and gets them all right, then in round one, he has $6,000. So in single Jeopardy, that's $6,000 just on the bottom that he's allowed to play with. And in double, that's $12,000 that he's just allowed to play with. So he maximizes that by building up the bottom and throwing it out to the stage. And I wanted to do something similar. I think confusion is actually a huge Jeopardy strategy. I remember during my game doing that to one of my opponents. She was very good. Both of my opponents were very good. In the end, they ended up scoring more than me, because in Final Jeopardy, I risked a little too much. But my one competitor had managed to get a little bit of control before I seized it back. And then I jumped to a category which I didn't say all of the words to, which you're not required to. They actually encourage you to not say all of the words, because it wastes time in the game and you want to get as many clues as possible. And doing so, she missed an important part of the category, which is it was 9-letter words. I only said 9, and that threw her off. And I think James is also doing the same. If he misses a clue and he doesn't know where it's going, he has no idea what the clue will be. If he lets his opponents ring in, they might not be on top of their game. They're more focused on trying to knock him out of the game than what the category was that he went to. And so there's a lot of strategy going into how he plays and what he's doing. And I tried to play somewhat similar, but I didn't have that buzzer to back it up. Now that he has that buzzer, we're all kind of watching him with like bated breath. We're doing the same question we did when we watched Ken Jennings back in the 2000s, early 2000s. We're thinking, well, is he going to like hit 1 million? And he already has. Is he going to hit 2 million? Can he hit higher than that? But I think the biggest question we're all asking ourselves is there anybody who can beat this man? And it's kind of insane watching this whole process go on.
Yeah, you know what it was weird about that is, like, yesterday, when at the time you and I are talking, it's a Thursday afternoon. So on Wednesday night, what did he win? Only like 70,000? But we're saying only 70 grand, as opposed to the days when he's gone over 100,000 each of those times. I mean, it's just crazy to see this total that he's accumulated over that time. My question to you is, do you think anybody actually has the ability to defeat him, or do you think it's going to be a case of Jeopardy says, hey, listen, you know, you've got a heck of a run going, but it's time to stop?
Well, that's the funny thing. Like, I was I talk a lot about Jeopardy strategy and about the people that come on the show. So there's kind of a parable I like to go back to. There's a fantastic competitor named Brad Rutter. Now, a lot of people forget Brad Rutter, but Brad Rutter is, to this day, undefeatable in single, in normal gameplay. When playing against human contestants, Brad Rutter has not lost, ever. But Brad Rutter was back in a time when contestants were limited to a 5-game success rate, and then they retired undefeated. But when you look at it, Brad Rutter's knowledge is encyclopedic, and his skill of the buzzer, he might lose every once in a while, but he kind of jumps back into the game. When looking at all of the knowledge that James has and the buzzer skill, you realize that he's kind of a medium-tier player with high-tier buzzer skills. His knowledge isn't encyclopedic. It's very good, but it's not insane. And if somebody can come through with better buzzer skills, they could definitely take him down. It's highly manageable. I think the biggest thing people need to watch out for is his betting. People need to start being able to bet like him, which means having that knowledge. So you can't have somebody who kind of just happens to come on the show and is ready for their time in the spotlight, but they didn't practice. You can't have that person bet $15,000. But somebody who's been prepared for this for years and they kind of just walk in and they know their stuff, they're pretty confident. You need someone like that. Like, there's a competitor whose name was Alex Jacob. He was very smart, good on the buzzer, very dominant play. And he didn't play as strongly as Holzhauer did. But just like Holzhauer, he was a gambler in some form. He was a poker player.
Was he the bartender guy also?
No, that was Austin Rogers, who was kind of insane in his own right. Austin Rogers is fantastic, and that's a story for a completely different moment.
Yeah, I just looked up the name Alex Jacob. Yeah, I totally remember seeing this guy before. He had, like, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars in his account, too. So here's another one for you. With this streak going on for Holzhauer, you think you're going to try to get your name back into the mix on things? I know you've been on the show before. Are you going to try to go up against him or any time in the future?
Well, see, that's the thing. Unfortunately, I couldn't go back on Jeopardy, but there are a few different avenues in which a lot of trivia contestants go up against each other. Unfortunately, I don't think I'm good enough to go on any of them because there's like... there's a trivia convention every year, like a national trivia convention, shortened TCONA, T-C-O-N-A. And it is insanely high play. And people who talk about good trivia contestants and people who have been talking about James Holzhauer have been bringing up their experiences at TCONA playing against him, and he is fantastic there. And honestly, my skill is more on that trivia that puzzle solving that Jeopardy has on the clues. I don't know if my knowledge base is something to compete against, like, the top players. I couldn't play against the Pam Muller or Colby I couldn't play against Brad Rutter. I definitely could not beat Ken, and I don't think I would be able to beat James. But I think you put me in a facet that I'd be way more understanding in a different kind of trivia, and I could definitely take them. But, like, I could never do that. I keep watching the contestants. I watched an interview with another good Jeopardy contestant, Louis Vertel, and he said that when he watches the show as a former Jeopardy contestant, he just stares at the other two players with, like, no soul and just goes, "You're going to lose." Like, he can't stop it. And I feel the same way. I'm watching these two, and I cannot imagine being in that spot. If I sat there, I'd just be looking at them and going, "Oh God, it's over." And as you watch the game go on more and more, you can see in their eyes that it just, their eyes just become dull. Like they're just done. And I feel like I would get the same way, but at the beginning of the game. So I in no way could face this guy. I already know this. I think I'm just kind of impressed and wanting to see how the run goes and following the tracker, because his average gameplay right now, you mentioned that he got quote unquote just $70,000. And the funny thing is, his average score right now is like 75,000 or so, which is the second highest non James Holzhauer score in history. So there's no way. And I commend whoever beats James Holzhauer, even if they are a one-day champion, their name should be remembered just like Nancy Zerg, who's the person who defeated Ken Jennings. That person should be remembered in history.
Here's a question for you. Hypothetical scenario. You throw James Holzhauer, you throw Ken Jennings, and I'm just Googling a few Jeopardy contestants I remember. Matt Jackson, for example. You throw the three of them, Tournament of Champions. Who's the winner in one game between the three of them, you think?
I think that Ken would eke it out, probably. Matt is very good. He's very dominant. And that's why during the All-Star Tournament, I think Ken picked Matt. Ken was part of Team Matt. I mean, Matt was part of Team Ken. But I think Ken also knows that he's kind of got the game on that. Ken has been practicing buzzer for years. He kind of knows what he's doing on that. Matt's a dominant player, and his knowledge base is of the top tier. But he could never beat him on the buzzer, and I don't think James Holzhauer could either. I think they would definitely trade blows. I think the comparison to Ken is apt because he comes into the game and knows what he's doing. But I think another thing is Ken has been watching this run, and so now he's building up a new strategy, because Jeopardy's always going to invite back Ken Jennings. He is iconic. If they're having a big tournament and they're saying, let's compare all the best players of Jeopardy history, they're going to say, Ken, you're coming back. Matt, you're coming back. Brad, you're coming back. They're going to invite back these people. And I think these people have more years, more experience, more knowledge in the strategy, and they have the benefit of having watched James and buffer and adding more to their strategy than just having a strategy as they jump in.
When were you on the show?
I was on in April of last year during the college championship.
Okay, so in about the 1 year since, how many times have you been asked about your Jeopardy run? Are you able to count it on two hands?
I'm able to count it if I had like five hands. It happens a lot.
Do you ever get sick of it?
You know, I would like to think that I don't, but you know, it's funny because looking back on it, I wasn't a remarkable contestant. I was a contestant that you get every once in a while, and I wanted to do more. I dream of that every day. I'm like, oh, if I could go back, I would do so much more. But at the same time, it's exciting. It brings me back. It gives me a chance to go, like, if I were in L.A. one more day, I know what I would do.
So what's the rule? Do they say that you're not allowed to go on the show more than once?
Yes. So you cannot, because you'd have the same player signing up again and again and again. So, the way that, and you have any kind of run or you're actually invited and you appear, that's your invitation. Do as well as you can with that invitation. That's what you got.
Okay. That's I never knew that. And I don't think a lot of people knew that either. Hey, last question I've got for you, kind of away from the actual game itself. I'm sure you probably heard the news earlier this year that Alex Trebek, he's battling cancer. I mean, what was your reaction when you heard this news? And, what did you think about your time actually getting to know Alex?
You know, I was incredibly sad about it because, you know, he's, in the words of Ken Jennings, he's like the last great Cronkite. He represents this halcyon era of Jeopardy. Of broadcast television in general. You see different kind of game show hosts have come and gone, but Alex Trebek has stayed for about 3.5 decades now as a host of one thing, which has become a part of our life. We see it everywhere. When people try and reference the 80s and they try to bring back a time when, you know, families sat around the table in movies or television, they'll put Jeopardy on the air and have Alex sitting there with his mustache just as the representation of what the 80s was. And that's how much he means to us. We could show him at different eras and people know who he is. People know where he's from. Even if people don't recognize his face, people reference Jeopardy all the time. I hear it all the time. I've shown people pictures of Alex Trebek that did not know who he was, but have used the phrase, "I'll take blank for 500, Alex." He's become this part of our culture. And so hearing about it is very sad, but it also kind of empowered us. Like Jeopardy contestants, for example, we all kind of came together and we did this event on the 15th of March, I think, where we watched the episode and every clue that we got right, we donated money to, can't remember where, it was a place obviously for cancer research. And then I know that one of the contestant coordinators is currently on a team to raise money for a cancer walk that they're doing. And their team name is Team Alex. And she sent us all the email, and contestants from different generations. I've been looking at the chart where it shows people donating money, like Dave Madden and Alex and Austin Rogers, as we mentioned earlier. They're throwing money in and donating, and we're all trying to scrape up money and donate. It's kind of given us a kick. And the funny thing is, as you watch Alex, he doesn't look like he's changed. He told us about stage 4. Like, that's severe. And yet Alex is standing there no matter what, looking serious and being able to keep his composure and being able to throw us the game as he always has been for the last 35 years. It's impressive. And so it makes us all sad, but we're all kind of, we know if anybody can pull it out, it's him. And so we're just kind of waiting with bated breath and a spark to keep going.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.